So I want to start by thanking the conference organizers for inviting me. I live in the world of political science, so it's been a real treat to listen to these debates, and I've learned a lot. In terms of my work, I work on the Nordic countries and the way they engineer big leaps into new industries, so big discontinuous shifts both in policy and in economic organization. And this really fascinated me because it contradicted everything that I learned about European capitalism. In my case, the varieties of capitalism school, but maybe we could talk about the debates about related variety that we had earlier this morning, right? The iconic image of European capitalism is Germany, right? And if I asked you what Germany was doing 40 years ago, there's a good chance you'd be thinking of automobiles, right? Volkswagens, of course. And if I asked you what Germany was doing today, right, there's a very good chance you'd still be thinking about cars, right? Nicer cars, newer cars with embedded software and so on and so forth, but still cars, right? Very different picture if we're talking about Finland, the country that I know best. If I asked you what Finland was doing in the 1970s, right, you would be thinking of some sort of forest product, right? And you might imagine that Finland would be making forest products, toilet paper today, you know, maybe with embedded software or electronic sensors or something like that. But when we think of Finland, we don't think of forest products, right? Already by the 1990s, we're thinking of mobile phones and Nokia, right? Having listened to all the talks, I've decided that you guys are a bit more serious than political science, so I'll just skip the joke here and note that the Finns have been reinventing their economy like this for a century, and they're continuing to do so, right? Just going to pretend that I didn't include that in the talk, and note that it's not just Finland, right? It's Sweden too, and Spotify here represents the country's transformation from one of the least entrepreneurial countries in the OECD in the 1970s into a unicorn factory, right? And so I could continue, but we have this broad pattern of radical, rapid change, right? And how do we explain that? Okay. When we look at the Nordic countries as a whole, all five, across 100 years, a lot of our standard explanations really come up short. I'm not going to go through all of them, but if I just focus on the state, since that's the theme of the conference, right, the Nordic countries have reinvented themselves under very different regimes, from the extremely statist in post-war Iceland and Finland to the very laissez-faire, right? And so with the possible exception of economic openness, who I would give an Oscar for best supporting actor, I actually don't think that these explanations capture the wide variety of regimes under which the Nordic countries have reinvented themselves. And so what I do in my own work is draw on Peter Katzenstein's Small States in World Markets and focus less on the state or labor or employers, and rather the way they're connected, right, in cohesive, encompassing networks. They trust each other, and significantly, these networks extend across firms, across industries, across sectors, regions, and socioeconomic classes, right? My early work focused on formal institutions, neo-corporatism, encompassing producer associations, and more recently, I've become interested in the role of informal ties and collective narratives. But the result is the same, right? And for many political scientists, it would be puzzling, right? We don't usually think about cohesive, encompassing, tight-knit networks as facilitating change. If anything, they block it, or at most, they channel it in this incremental, gradual upmarket movement that I just spoke about, right? But I would argue that we should reconceptualize cooperation in these networks, and they can play a much more disruptive role. And I identify three mechanisms by which that can happen. All right. First of all, you have your politics of persuasion, right? Think about the speed with which a new idea or business model can diffuse within a very tight-knit network. A Swede referred to this as the Bjorn Borg effect, which I have not found online, but the idea that, you know, when he makes it big in tennis, suddenly everyone in Sweden wants to play tennis, right? Then you have the politics of compensation. You can't persuade everyone, but it's a lot easier to identify and credibly compensate the losers in a small, tight-knit community. Think about the neoliberal Prime Minister David Oddsson's handshake deal with Labour in Iceland, which never could have happened in the UK or the US, and was integral to his political success, right? And then finally, you have the politics of coordination, where everyone is firing like in the same direction, right? And a good example of this might be a post-war Swedish industrial policy. Like, technically, they didn't have an industrial policy, but so many different policies were geared toward the promotion of large capital-intensive enterprises that I think even the French would have been envious, right? So let me illustrate with reference to Finland and Finland's transformation, right? So if we go back to 1978, Finland, half their exports are paper products. The rest are large capital-intensive firms taking metal out of the ground or processing it. And there's a hostile, even violent reaction to the suggestion of innovation or innovation policies, right? That changes around 1980 or 1981 because Finland's worked itself into a pickle. And crisis really is, I think, an important part of the story that we haven't spoken about yet today. Finland avoids the OPEC oil crisis, but by turning to bilateral trade with the Soviet Union, which is seen as an existential crisis when a quarter of their exports are going to the USSR in 1980. Like, everyone is freaking out about this. And so suddenly they start racing around for alternative growth models and alternative strategies, right? And they settle on two. One is financial liberalization, which I won't talk about, but that's a fun story. And the other is innovation, right? They really latch on to innovation. And within just a few years, there's a broad consensus on this, right? And why? Well, it's the same mechanisms I talked about before, right? You can trace it out. You have courses that teach or educate all of the elites in Finnish society, the CEOs, the newspaper editors, the politicians, and economists come in and tell them about how important innovation is, and it's an asset and an investment rather than a cost, and so on, right? The losers are compensated. Organized labor receives more generous social benefits in the 1980s. When macroeconomic conditions change, there's a promise not to touch sensitive labor market reforms in exchange for supporting heavy investments in innovation. And then finally, you have coordination through the Science and Technology Policy Council. Now, some of you would say, okay, this is an overly statist narrative, right? But Nokia does the same thing. I could tell exactly the same story about Nokia leveraging these tight-knit networks, beginning with Kari Kairamo in the 1980s, using his own personal network within the Finnish Employers Association, as well as these informal clubs to diffuse these new ideas, and then using their deep pockets in the 1990s to basically reorganize Finnish industry in their image, right? And the results are staggering, right? Not just the rise of Nokia, not just the rise of the ICT industry, but the way it changes traditional industries as well, like food processing, which was a low productivity backwater in the 1980s, but is investing 4% of turnover in R&D by the late 1990s, right? So this is pervasive, right? So up until now, I have... presented a, so yeah, there are other cases that I'd be happy to talk about, right? So Sweden, Iceland, Denmark, work I'm doing now on Kitchener-Waterloo in Canada. I should address sort of the elephant in the room, which is up until now, this is like very positive portrayal of Nordic Europe. All the Nordic Europeans are sitting very smugly in their chairs and everyone else is sort of groaning at this depiction of Nordic Europe as just sunshine and smiles. I have to very briefly note that I've done enough fieldwork in Nordic Europe, almost all entirely between the months of October and March, to notice that there wasn't a lot of sunshine and very few smiles, right? There is a dark side to this, and the obvious elephant in the room is like, why is this guy talking about Nokia? Like, does the company still exist? Like, wasn't Finland like the worst performing country in the Eurozone post-2007? To which I would say, oh yeah, funny you should mention, I have a book about that. which just came out, because it turns out that when you think about cooperation as this much more dynamic force instead of something that's intrinsically static and path dependent, you also recognize that there are new ways to get yourself into trouble, right? Because those tight-knit networks can diffuse bad ideas as well as good ones, right? So Pentti Kauri walks into Finland with a degree from MIT in the 1980s and says, hey, I have this great new highly leveraged business model. Do you want to try it out? And everyone says, yes, that sounds awesome, right? And then once these things start to scale, right, because of the politics of compensation, the risks of social exclusion and marginalization for criticizing a growth model become much higher. And then when you're coordinating not just all your public policies, but societal institutions as well, you run into the risk of overshooting, which is precisely what happens in Finland's case, right? So part of this is a story about Nokia, right? Connecting people. So in the case of Finland, you know, if Nokia is one third of the ICT industry, like another third is its subcontracting network, not just manufacturing, but software and R&D and so on. And so when Nokia goes down, it takes them with it, right? And then of the remaining third, many are focused on mobile communications, which is partly a story about policy coordination, right? Which you get, for instance, in this quote, where these consortia, right? They cover a wide variety of sectors and industries, but there's definitely a reward to focusing in mobile communications, right? But I also like this quote because there's a second problem with what goes on in Finland with like over-coordination, and that's the emphasis on, or the interpretation of innovation as R&D and the emphasis on technological innovation rather than all of the other things that go into commercialization, which is fine if you're a century-old conglomerate like Nokia and you have a marketing department and you know how to manage supply chains and so on and so forth, but it makes it really difficult to create new enterprises and diversify when you're doing that, right? And so there's like a long list of things that Finland is excluding when everything is geared toward the maximization of technological innovation and R&D. My favorite quote is from this like extremely frustrated marketing major about the neglect of marketing. In my own work, I've talked about labor market reform with a comparison with Denmark. But in terms of where I want to go from here, I actually don't remember, so we'll find out. Oh, yes. So Finland is not stuck in 2007 or 2009, right? It is changing. There's a booming startup scene. The public policies are very different from what they were. They've changed in both good ways and bad ways. But I think to convince you, I probably need to move beyond Finland, right? And so in the book, Finland is embedded in three main cases that I look at. So I also look at Sweden. I focus on the shift from laissez-faire to statism and the rise of heavy industry as well as its crisis in the 1980s. And then I look at Iceland, and of course that's a story about liberalization and financialization, which is just absolutely riveting, right? So each of the chapters looks at the countries as a whole, right? Which so the three different crises enable me to address some alternative explanations, which I'd be happy to talk about in the Q&A. But you can also compare them to each other, like the same boom-bust cycles. And I would argue, I mean, in my last round of fieldwork, I just flat out like asked people, right? But by a variety of different measures, I'd argue that Finland is a lot more tight-knit, a lot more cohesive, encompassing than Sweden, right? And Iceland basically takes it to a level 11, and that's reflected in the magnitude of the policy change, the speed of the restructuring, as well as the overshooting, right? And that's based not just on some individual crises, right? But it shows up in the aggregate figures as well, right? And you can compare the Nordic countries. They really stand out, not only relative to the large countries, so that would be what? The France, Germany, and the United States that I look at in the book, but also relative to the small and open, but federal and sectorally coordinated states of Central Europe, Austria and Switzerland. Greece and Portugal are interesting, but I'm going to skip them for reasons of time and wrap it up, right? In terms of conclusions, so obviously I think that instead of viewing cooperation or these dense networks as a conservative force that's constantly delaying change, it's important to think about it also as a potential resource for accelerating change and diffusing new ideas. Karikairamo would be a private sector actor, but we could talk about people who play that role in the public sector. David Johnston was the president of the University of Waterloo. The first head of TECIS, whose name is escaping me at the moment, would also fall into that category. So if we're going to focus on the state, you know, think about how you can leverage these tight-knit networks, right? At the same time, recognize that flexibility comes with a price. There's a cost to doing so. There's the risk of overshooting. And markets are an imperfect check against this. They'll tell you what you're doing wrong in a crisis, but during good times and periods of irrational exuberance, there are precious few checks against this. And this comes up again and again and again in Nordic history, right? Which is why I usually conclude with a call for effective risk-sharing institutions, both nationally and internationally, because if the Nordic countries can't get it right, no one can. Since I was sitting next to Rainer, I wanted to do a shout out to his work on organizational variety, which I think is important not only for large, federal, diverse countries like Canada, where one-size-fits-all innovation policy doesn't make sense, but also for small countries like Finland, right? And the research I haven't talked about, but I could in the Q&A, would be like the role of Sitra, a public think tank, which until the 1990s was kind of like the black sheep of Finland on the margins of the public sector and society, and ignored, was able to really develop these alternative growth models that were then sitting on the shelf and could be pulled off and scaled by other actors when a crisis hit. And crises inevitably hit, right? So thank you very much, and I look forward to the discussion.